Hello and welcome once again to this episode of Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. My name is Peter Woodbury, and today I'll be interviewing Joan Ranquette. She's an animal communicator, an equestrian, also an author of Communication with All Life and the Revelations of an Animal Communicator. She's the founder of Communication with All Life University, and she's also a frequent presenter here at the ARE. So without further ado, let's proceed with Joan Ranquette. So hi, Joan. Nice to see you today, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
It's great to see you also.
How are you feeling today? How are things going?
Things are good. It's very windy out. I've had a great dog walk already today, and I've got my cats assisting the interview. So
yeah,
things are good.
Yeah, you mentioned you have, is it four cats, two dogs, and two horses?
I do.
That's great. That's great. And so, so your field, or what we know you here at the ARE, is about animal communication.
Yes, and energy healing. I've done both
and
workshops
healing.
There.
And energy healing with animals.
Energy healing with animals, yes.
Oh, good. What are some questions that you get asked a lot that are just typical questions that maybe we can start with?
Of what people ask me about animal about
yes.
their animals or about animal communication?
About animal communication or about their animals.
Well, almost everybody asks me how it works. And I like to say that, you know, animal communication is telepathy. And telepathy is the transference of pictures, words, and feelings, and that we're all doing it all the time. And not only are we not, we're not really doing it like that. I always say that that makes telepathy sound like an action verb, right? Like mm-hmm. we're not sending and receiving. We're actually kind of being that. Like I think of those old radio tower ads from RKO where it's like the radio tower power is like sending, you know, it's transmitting. So mm-hmm. it's like sending and receiving all at the same time. It's not one or the other. So, yeah, but I can get very specific and do that, you know, sending and receiving thing and get information from people's animals.
I see. And when did you first notice you could do that? Or has that just been something that's been part of your whole life?
I probably first started noticing, well, I grew up with horses, so I've always been really connected with horses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that, I mean, when you just look at the horse itself, like there's no other animal that we really co-created civilization with, right? We can say that dog is man's best friend, and we know that the, you know, if you're a cat person, you pretty much are employed. But if with horses, there's nobody that's really partnered up with us quite like the horse has, you know? So when you have a partnership with a horse, it's pretty deep. And it's so I recognized early on that that sensibility with horses, but I couldn't have put a name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was years later, mm-hmm. I went and got a degree in theater and, you know, lived in New York and I lived in LA. And it was in Los Angeles that I had the opportunity to get a horse. And so that that brought on the whole thing. Like I, you know, I'm dating myself, but in the late 80s, I actually used an animal communicator and got a sense of what was going on for my horse. And it really just confirmed information for me, but it mm-hmm. was what made me feel really close to my horse. And I feel like that's often what people get when they have a session with me or another animal communicator, is they have a lot of information confirmed, because I think everybody's really an animal communicator. And then they also, deep in their connection.
I see. So was it, you said you,
you said,
oh, I'm getting like an echo. You said that when you started working with the horse, that you had a communicator. Is there anything we can do about the echo? I'm hearing myself echo. So you said that when you, okay, that's good. You said when you started working with your horse and you had an animal communicator, was that kind of the kind of proving to you that you were on target, like what the animal communicator was saying and kind of what you were feeling were in sync?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it actually, you know, as much as I loved being in the film business, which now I look back and go, oh my God, how did I do that? It made me want to become an animal communicator, but I didn't know, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't think I could. Mm-hmm. And then the universe conspired.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Now, a question that we get asked all the time here and at the ARE and with Casey's work, you know, we talk about reincarnation of people, and Edgar Casey gave one reading for a woman's dog and talked about in a previous life that dog had been a lion. Is that anything that you get involved with the souls of animals or communicating with animals that have are on the other side?
Absolutely. And one of the things that before we started the interview, and I said that I had four cats and two dogs and two horses.
Yes.
You said they all get along. And I said, and to me, it's just like, of course they all get along. I have a natural expectation that they all get along.
Yes.
But I think part of that is because they are familiar. They have been a part of, like, we've been a soul family before. We've all been connected before. So it's almost like this, you know, celebration when we came together of, we're back together.
Oh, so you all are like a soul group, you know, what Casey would call a soul group.
Total soul group, yes.
And are you in touch with the previous incarnations of your animals?
Yes, this one right here came back. She's been with me for, she was with me. Her last life was with me, and she came back in cat form again, this time, and came back pregnant. And when I had her before, she had just had babies, and I helped find her, her babies. And then this time she came back and she was pregnant. And so I accidentally kept three of the six babies, and that's how I have four cats. So, and actually one of the horses down right outside, was one of my horses when I was young. But I mean, I think it even predates this lifetime for me. That's how familiar we all are in our coming together this time.
Oh, that's nice. That's going to be reassuring for a lot of people. Now, do that, like, cats stay like in the feline string, or do they cross over like a horse can reincarnate as a dog? Is that, do you have any information about that?
Transmigration. Yeah, I mean, and I know that Edgar Casey didn't talk about animals being human, but I've known some that have, and I can guarantee I've been a horse a few times.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I feel like there are a lot of, there's a lot of transmigration. You know,
from human to animal. Easy.
Now,
do you find do animals communicate differently? Like, do cats kind of have like can you tell if you're communicating with a cat or a horse or a dog? Is there a difference? I don't know, like a dialect or kind of imagery?
Yeah, I mean, for me, whenever I see a cat that goes, she's really just saying, hey, how's it going? other people. I think it just depends on the soul and the being, right? Like I had, you know, there's like almost like if you think in terms of almost archetypes. Like there's animals that are going to try really hard to do the right thing. So they're always going to over anticipate, and they're going to be busy, busy, busy trying to do the right thing. I mean, that could be a dog, that could be a horse, that could be a cat. So I think it's more about the persona, the essence, the soul, who that being is. Because you can get an easygoing horse and it would be about like talking to a cat. So it's just really depending on who that being is.
Mm. Now, I've been here at the ARE for about 15 years, and I remember my first week here, I knew I was in a different place. I had all these different experiences that were quite unusual. And I remember I was working in the library, and I was working side by side with an animal communicator. And she was telling me that most often when she goes in to work with people with their pets, like cats and dogs, she says they'll tell that, you know, as soon as they know that she can pick up what they're thinking, they say, tell them to change our food. We're so sick of the same food. And that, I just chuckled. It made so much sense to me. You know, if you're feeding your dog gravy train for years or something, they want a little variety.
They want a lot of variety.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. Do you find that...
Yeah. You know what's...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that, you know, that was an era when 15 years ago, if you think about it, like, we were starting to really Google, and that we didn't really have Dr. Google as much as we do now.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have really gotten savvy on how to feed their animals a little better, thankfully. So mm-hmm. that's not so much a question or, you know, a demand anymore, but in the old days, for sure.
Now, do you find that, are there themes about among the pets or the animals that you communicate with, let's say when you're helping somebody to communicate with their pet dog or their pet cat, do you find that there are certain themes that come up, or is it always pretty different?
I mean, I find it's always pretty different.
Mm-hmm.
One of the sessions I did this morning was this woman had a dog that had left the planet about 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she's someone that had about 18 surgeries. So she has this service dog that's about a year and a half old.
Mm-hmm.
And once that older dog left in February, this service dog was really unable to do his job. And, you know, part of that was grief, and part of that was how dependent he was on the other dog. So mm-hmm. I think the theme is more, it depends on the household more mm-hmm. than anything, like how much safety she's set up for those animals and how much responsibility she's giving somebody. So I think it's more, the theme is more in line with, I guess, kind of who we're being in the world and how we're showing up and what we're expecting of our animals.
Mm. I see. So you're kind of like helping the owner get in touch with the feelings of their pet and kind of improve the relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like counseling.
And it often accidentally improves us.
Mm-hmm. Well, say more about that. How does having pets in our life, how does that help us, and kind of how can we be more receptive to animals' kind of feelings and thoughts?
Okay, I'll break that down to one way we could see what animals' feelings and thoughts are, just as a like sort of glossed over way, is we would look at the behavior of the animals. I take people on a lot of wildlife trips, and I have observed, you know, and I've did 8 years of dolphin trips, and I've done like a couple of South Africa trips, and I just got back from Borneo where we were with the orangutans. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you look at animals in the wild, they, I always joke that there's only three things they really, really need. And that's a sense of safety, food, and sex.
Mm-hmm.
And since we spay and neuter a lot of our animals, we've taken the sex out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do provide food. That's part of the deal, is we feed them. So the real question always comes down to, are we providing them with safety?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the big answer comes back with how are they behaving? And if they're, you know, if they're acting out in some way or they're not getting along with each other, then we know you're not setting up a sense of safety. Mm. So I think that when we think about our own emotions, like if I came home from work, and actually this is me coming home from work, it's just sitting right here because I'm always on with other people. Let's say I came home from a day job and I was really stressed. Well, animals are going to do one of two things. They're either going to get away from that stress or they're going to try, you know, they've learned ways to try to get us out of it. You know, they might be funny. They may have gone through the garbage. They may, you know what I mean? Like there's all different ways that they're going to respond to our energy. Mm. And so when we start to recognize that the way that my dog or cat is responding, that if I'm not setting up safety first, as just the overall tone of my household, then I can expect some naughty behavior. And that's, you know, kind of, I guess, how if we, it's like that whole thing in the airplane, like if I put the gas mask on first and then I start to breathe and I can take care of everybody else, that's how I feel like our household should be. So it's, mm-hmm. it's sort of like really looking at where our lives can improve when we start to look at who we're being at home. And when we start to be better at home, we're going to be better out in the world.
Mm-hmm. I see. So is it more that we need to tune in with our animals when they seem unhappy? Or is there some, like I'm watching your cats, they look like they're blissed out. Is that really less, it's almost like a friend who's taking a nap, you just kind of leave them alone.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like napping, I mean, if you could see this guy right here, he is just like grooming and napping.
Yeah.
You know, life is.
Yeah, he looks secure, he looks fed. I don't know about the third one.
I mean, but it doesn't get any better than that, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's kind of the goal.
So do you find that if an animal is content, does it communicate less? Like, is it just, you know, like kind of like we are, I think when we're satisfied, maybe we're more quiet than when we're agitated or upset about something.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and it also, I mean, I have a border collie who's lying down over there, and border collies are known for being, you know, pretty, they can be wound up.
Yeah.
And right now she's wound up too. But, you know, this morning out on the walk, she was on top of everything. So, but when we're home, right, like this is our normal state.
Yeah. Now, do you teach courses or do you help people learn how to be more tuned in to their pets or to animals?
I teach all over. I teach animal communication. I teach energy healing. I'm about to put together a big animal medical intuition course. And then I've also got just about to release an animal business academy. So helping people that are, whether you're an animal groomer or a veterinarian, how to kind of get your business out there more, animal communicators, energy healers, massage. So really working with people to, because the thing I look at is if the only reason people are more busy in their business is because people don't know about it. Right? People don't know about dog massage, say. So I put this little kind of animal business course together in hopes of getting people out there more helping animals, because the more we help animals, the better we're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I teach in workshops. I teach at ARE. I teach at, I have live workshops here, and I have a ton of online courses.
Yeah. And what are some of the steps? Like, how do you take someone from beginning to, you know, developing, you know, the intuitive sense of being able to communicate with an animal? Like, how is that? Is everybody different? Like, you have to fine tune it to every individual, or is there some kind of like, so you can teach it like a course, so there's some uniformity to it?
There's some uniformity to it, and then everyone's a little bit different.
Yeah.
So there's uniformity in how I teach, but let's say in the beginning, when you're really trying to get good at pictures, words, and feelings from animals, a lot of times people that have like a visual background will be able to perceive telepathy in pictures, whereas somebody else who maybe was a lawyer or a writer or an accountant might really perceive it in words. And someone else who's just been empathic their whole life, they're going to pick up on pictures. So my goal as a teacher is that then I want to take that person who has a really great visual sense and be able to still get words and still get pictures out of them. Because we actually all think in pictures, and people don't know that. Mm-hmm. So we are always sending pictures and we're always receiving pictures, but people think that, oh, I heard a word or I felt a feeling. And the truth is you got it in surround sound. You got the feeling in the picture. So when we start to discover that, then we can really get almost like little movies of what happened. Mm-hmm. So that's the goal for me, is that somebody gets all of that. And then my goal as a teacher is that, you know, if they're studying with me long term, is that they're completely consistent, that nothing throws them. So that if something happened where maybe you had a really bad day, you still can drop in and have that kind of a connection with an animal, and it's not going to, you know, your real world stuff, like if you're in a divorce or you have to move, like you can move all that stuff aside and still be in that very centered place and connect with animals and their humans.
Mm. Now, what do you think of go ahead.
Those are some of the steps, you know, those are some of that's my job, is to get that consistent.
I see. And so you, you'll take them through that and help folks, do you teach, do they bring their pets with them, or is there, or sometimes yes, sometimes no?
You know, here's the thing. It's sort of like being on a film shoot. Like, animals and kids are so distracting, right? I mean, The problem with everybody bringing animals to a class is, you know, you just roll around on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of, do it people only. And then help them do it when they get home. Now,
we do it with pictures. So we understand we do telepathy through pictures. So because, for example, in my day job, I'm pretty much most days, well, I teach a lot of days anymore, but in the old days, mm-hmm. I sat here in front of the computer and talked to animal after animal because people would send me pictures of their animal, and I've got a big screen here, so there would always be this giant dog in my living room or whatever. That's how I teach people. But when they come to live workshops, so that's why I'm able to teach online all day long. But when they come to live workshops, there are a few animals that we interact with. And certainly when I'm teaching energy healing and body work and things like that, we work on real animals and not stuffed animals.
Mm-hmm. Now, just like here's a kind of a bigger picture kind of question. How do you have any thoughts about kind of where we're at as, you know, the human animals and then the, you know, the other animals? Like what's the state of our relationship? Do you think that we're moving away? I mean, do we have a lot that we should be improving when you think of just kind of in general humanity and animals?
I mean, the fact that we have factory farms, that we poach, that we have a genocide in the shelters because we take zero responsibility for how we are with animals and we just throw them away.
Yes.
I mean, we've got so far to go. Mm-hmm. And it's, and I even, you know, it's, yeah, we've got a long, 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 long way to go. And I think that, you know, we can sit here and improve our lives at home, but we have to be thinking big picture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we don't even have, you know, we could look at Syria. We've got so many things on the planet with other humans that we can't even organize. So
yeah.
we've got... I feel like animals are, in a weird way, for many of us, that opportunity to be our best self, to be super humanitarian. And so it's often, I mean, it really is the opportunity to, for us to understand what it is to care about someone and to not have that big agenda. And that maybe we could even do that with other humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I hear you saying there's a lot of, we have a lot of insensitivity, not just with animals, but with each other. So we're still kind of growing in compassion with all of creation, unfortunately. I hear you.
And the planet. I mean, look what we've done to the planet.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Now, just kind of going back, backing up a little bit, tell me a little bit about the other ways that you work with animals. I understand you do tapping. Is that a primary kind of modality used for helping animals?
Yes. So I wrote a book. My first book was Communication with All Life, Revelations of an Animal Communicator. And in that book, I kind of mentioned tapping, and I mentioned chakras, and I mentioned some energy things. And my next book was Energy Healing for Animals. Mm-hmm. And I say in that book that as much as I know about energy healing, and it's funny because I know that Norm Shealy comes there, and way back in the 90s, I studied with Norm and I studied with Carolyn Mace, but I was already an animal communicator at that point. And so I really kind of fine tuned some of the medical intuition and things like that. So I learned a lot about nutrition and all sorts of things from Norm Shealy. And I love all the different energy healing modalities, and I've explored a lot of them. But my favorite will always be actually animal communication. And then my second favorite is, well, I go between something called the scalar wave, and I can talk about that in a minute, but also EFT, emotional freedom technique. And when I was connecting with that young woman today who said that her dog had been, service dog had been really affected by the loss of the other dog. She told me that I was at a big conference last weekend speaking, and I did a group round of tapping for, I asked everybody in the room, it was a horse nutrition conference. Mm-hmm. I asked everybody if they'd had an accident ever with a horse and if they still had fear in their body, and 150 people raised their hands, yes. So I did a group round of tapping with everyone. Well, this woman said that that night, it was the first night since the other dog had died that her service dog had slept through the night. Mm-hmm. And she asked me, why was that? And I said, because something really released out of your nervous system that if this dog who's trying so hard to be on and help you, he finally had a sense of relaxation because you had a sense of relaxation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the reason I love tapping so much is that when something happens between like horse and rider or human and dog or even human and cat, there's a set of emotions that the animal have and there's a set of emotion that the people have. And they may be similar, but they're never the same. And then they just compound each other. So it just makes the situation worse.
Mm.
So a lot of times, it becomes like an infinity sign of bad biofeedback, right? Like I'm nervous. Oh no, now the horse is like, I'm nervous. And then the horse, you know, sends that back to the person. The person's like, oh my God, now he's nervous and I'm even more nervous, right? Like we just get into this thing and we can't get out of it. Same thing happens if we have a dog that's leash aggressive. Mm. You know, all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I don't even want to go outside because that neighbor is out there with his dog. And it gets into this whole crazy thing. Mm. And so when we can be the adult, when the human can be the adult in the situation and be what I like to call the emotional leader, then we have the ability to change things for our animals.
Yes.
But even if we don't have the ability to change things for our animals, something like the EFT tapping does work because it brings their nervous system down and they aren't going to respond as much to the human.
Mm.
So, and the great thing about energy techniques for animals is they don't have a belief system about it, right? Like they're just going to take it all in, and they're going to, they're not going to say, I don't believe in EFT. You know, they're going to just start to relax. Mm-hmm. And they've got all the acupressure points that I tap on the animals have a real calming effect, right? Like it's hitting the stomach points and a lot of the points that are going to automatically calm the animals. So even if you don't even have a big script and you've learned how to do it, you can calm your animal sometimes just by, you know, tapping them on the side of the eye. So there, it's awesome.
I see. So as you're talking, I was thinking, are animals kind of more vulnerable or more transparent than people are? I mean, I know we have defenses and we have like an ego and then it's kind of like walls. Are animals more, have less of that?
Well, I think that would depend on the animal, right?
See.
Like if you saw two lions walking toward each other, they're going to be like, I'm the tough one. No, I'm the tough one, right? Like they've got that going on too.
Mm-hmm.
But what I love to say about animals and that we don't really think of is their entire survival is dependent on emotion. So if you're a herd of zebra and one zebra senses danger, they all respond. So that's a web of energy that they're all connected into, and that fear ripples through and they are off. So it works the opposite too, of like, okay, this is safe, we can sit and graze here. So animals in our household, that hasn't been, you know, domesticated out of them. So they're always feeling into our world to see what is safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so on that level, yes, they're very vulnerable. They're not as shielded as we are.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the intellect. They don't have mm-hmm. the same kind of drive.
Mm-hmm.
So they can drop something often a lot easier than we can.
Mm-hmm.
So they
said, are they
when
more
you see something
so
like
so are there is their consciousness more
is
collective?
I
think it's individual and collective. They're more used to, I mean, they're autonomous in their individuality and yet they totally operate out of a bigger consciousness.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, they have to. That's how they've survived.
Yes. Now, is there a case that you like to use as a teaching story? Do you have a case that you would like to share? I found the cases that you've shared have been very enlightening as good examples of kind of what you do, and it helps kind of understand how a person might improve their telepathic ability with animals.
So a case of animal communication or EFT?
Yeah, of animal communication. Start to finish, someone came in with a animal and how you kind of helped resolve that issue. I mean, you probably have thousands. That's probably hard.
I do. One of my favorites is there was a woman that came to me with a 12-year-old German Shepherd and a 4-year-old lab, and they had lost the 8-year-old lab about 2 months before, and the 12-year-old German Shepherd was bereft, and there was nothing that could bring him out of that grief. And the woman was very sad too, because this 8-year-old dog was sort of the sunshine in the household. And when I connected with the 12-year-old German Shepherd, he told me that while he was really sad about the loss of that dog, he was also he was sad because he couldn't get it through to the parents that the teenager was really struggling with her homework. Really, really, really struggling. So this dog had taken on all this responsibility, and that sense of grief, you know, it just still looked like grief. So the mother said, well, that's weird. You know, she said, my other two kids are, you know, valedictorians of their class. They are, one got a full ride to Harvard, the other got a full ride to Stanford. And this girl, this teenager, well, we just call her our kind of our party girl. She's not really like the other two. So she, and the German Shepherd seemed a lot more like noble and free after giving this information away. So she went home and she told her husband about the session with me. And the husband immediately demanded testing for the daughter, for the teenager. So what they discovered was she was dyslexic, but she was actually as smart as the other two kids. And so anyway, that German Shepherd saved the day for that that family, because they actually found out how smart that young girl was too, and she really was struggling with her homework. So anyway.
What a great story. So the dog was extremely empathic, is just picking up a lot of things that were going on. Is that a tendency with animals, or again, was that just unique to the personality of that German Shepherd?
I would say it's both. You know, some animals are all about them and they care less what's going on with you, right? you know, like some cats I might know, not that I'm going to name names, Queen Latifah, but anyway, but yeah, there's other animals that are very empathic, and I like for people to think about maybe, because the truth is, if they are autonomous in this, you know, sort of bigger consciousness, how do we make them autonomous in their own individuality and part of the household, right? So sometimes animals are too empathic. And I'll tell you, I had a Border Collie German Shepherd cross years ago that I got when I was married. And in that time, we got divorced. My husband and I got divorced. I lost my stepkids. I moved. My mother had died. My father was dying, and me and the dog lost the cat. So it was like, there was just loss after loss after loss. And when my dad died, she hadn't had that big a relationship with my dad. And so when I was grieving and I watched her grieve, I realized, this isn't yours to grieve. You don't need to do this. I need you to be the dog. So I really work with a lot of people to help them kind of like put their animal in a bubble, make sure that we're not enmeshing, so that the animal can have their own joy, even if we're grieving. And that part of my grief relief is to go throw the frisbee for the dog who needs joy. So that we work together in that way and not get so enmeshed that we bring our dogs down with us, you know?
Yeah, now as you were talking about this, I was wondering, are there dogs that are able to, or animals that are able to communicate with the deceased animal? So if two dogs like this, where one has passed away, are they able, do they realize there's life after death and that sort of thing?
I mean, I think that they realize, I mean, I don't know that they're going to sit there and, again, I think it's individual. I think definitely animals have a quicker way of understanding that so-and-so is visiting. And it doesn't freak them out the way that it might scare somebody else. And I think like there are times I lost a horse 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And I know when he's visiting, because my other two horses just get whipped up into a frenzy. You know, it's like a party down there. So I think that some might be very philosophical about like, oh, here comes Barney. But, I think that it's everybody's very individual with that. And, you know, I've known some dogs that are scared. I've known some dogs to just bark in a corner. I've known of some cats that just sort of stare up at the ceiling. So, you know, there's some animals that don't understand it, and there's plenty that do. Mm-hmm. But they have a better and quicker awareness of it.
Good. Well, we're going to be wrapping up soon, but my last question, is there anything that you'd like to share that we haven't covered just yet?
I guess I feel like I actually believe that everybody's an animal communicator. So as much as I love my day job, I love empowering people to have that deeper connection and deeper sense at home. So one of the things that, you know, you might do if people are watching this or listening to this later on, to maybe just, you know, really sit and center yourself and imagine, you know, your animal sitting in that same centered space and see if communication, you know, if there's anything that your animal has to say. But it's really just getting centered and breathing and taking the time to connect up yourself.
Yes. Good. Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I look forward to perhaps meeting you the next time you're in Virginia Beach.
I'll be there in May and September.
Oh, great. Great. Look forward to seeing you. So thanks again for your time, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.